It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night, live on a Thursday from the Poorhouse down here in South Burlington. This place is absolutely packed. You know, I have to say this. We do a lot of remotes, a lot of different places, and the Poorhouse is always a place where we have some of our best attendance. Maybe that's because Rich likes the Poorhouse so much and all his buddies here hanging out. Congratulations to John, who just won our Yankee tickets. So we gave them a pair of Yankee tickets thanks to our friends at Labatt Blue. Remember, you can still come down here because we're here till 7. We got a lot of stuff to give away. We got plenty. Labatt swag, ESPN swag, Dunkin' Donuts swag. We got everything here. Come out till 7. If you want a pair of baseball tickets, we got Lake Monster tickets. And next Wednesday we'll be at Ake's Place for the final Go to Bat with Labatt session of the summer. We'll be giving away Red Sox tickets and a hotel down in Boston. So that'll be a fun time as well. So we are live at the Poorhouse until 7. Last night, Intern Sam got a reality check. I want everyone to know this. And Intern Sam's got a headset on, so I may just ask him to pipe in here for a second. In a second. Intern Sam told me he thinks he could beat me at basketball. And Intern Sam is a good athlete. He's a Division II hockey player at St. Michael's College, so he's a very good athlete. He's also not very tall, so I knew instantly that he wasn't going to beat me. At the very least, I knew I'm just going to out-height you and take you to the rim and score at will. So we played 3-on-3 yesterday, and I say this with full disclosure. I had not played basketball in a month and a half. So I did not have a great outside shot. In three games, I was maybe 7 for 20 from three. It was not great. It was not great, but I did exactly what I thought I would, just out-height him. I don't even like playing in games like that because I don't like to just out-height people. But I did think I showed Intern Sam that he has zero chance of beating me. He caught me on a bad day. I can't wait for him to catch me on a good day. And then Intern Sam lost to Arnie 21-2 in a 1-1 game. Sam, how are you feeling about yourself today?
You know, morale's a little low, but
you got to speak up a little bit. I know you're not Arnie, but
morale was a little low this morning, but, you know, I met my maker. That's all I got to say.
And your back's a little sore from taking it on the chin last night.
That is true. I woke up with a sore back. Shoulder was hurting a little bit,
too. Now, you beat Jason, though, 1-on-1?
I did beat Jason.
Jason, what happened? Because you shot well in the 3-on-3 games. What happened?
I'm not very good. He's quicker than me. He's got some handles. And when the jumper's not falling, you just keep shooting.
You talk about him having handles. He tried to throw the ball through my legs and dribble it between my legs. I was like, what kind of chump move is this?
If it works, it's a great move.
It didn't work. It got stolen.
I think with your shooting, my passing, I think we could be pretty good together.
Together, we would be a good player. Together, we would be a good 2-on-2 team. So we did have fun yesterday at the Edge, and I will say this. Baseball season for me is over this weekend. I'm going back to Albany on Sunday to pitch in the championship series of the Men's League. Game 3, I already know I've got the ball. So once Sunday comes, I try to win a title. And either way, though, I'm coming back to town and baseball season's over. I'll be all basketball all the time. So I'll get Intern Sam again before you go back to school when I'm really in basketball mode. We do have a very busy show today. We've got a lot more info on the Patriots preseason game tonight against the Jags. Batting practice at 6:20. And I'll tell you a little bit about Vince Wilfork as he retired this week, officially a member of the Patriots. The New York Mets did something yesterday that proved me absolutely right, a hypothesis that I've had for 1 year. But first, more on the Pats. Mike Gillisley won't play tonight with that hamstring injury. He's the most important running back on this roster for New England. I've thought hard about this. I've been singing it for months. I love what the Patriots have at running back. I love their depth. I love their ability to potentially overcome injury. I love the ability they have to be multifaceted in the run game and in the pass game through their running backs. I love all of those things. But if we are talking about which running back on the Patriots roster is potentially irreplaceable, to me, it is Mike Gillisley. Now, he's got that hamstring thing. He won't play tonight. Again, I don't think it's anything super serious, and we haven't heard anything that says he won't be around for the regular season. So this is just hypothetical. I want listeners to know this. If something happened to Mike Gillisley, that's the running back that I don't think the team can replace. Why? No player in that running back group is built like Gillisley except Gillisley. I mean, he is the guy that is the Mack truck. He's the guy that can go through third and two, fourth and one, second and goal. He's the guy that is built and was acquired to punch the ball in from those distances and to acquire first downs in those distances and in those situations. If something happened to Deion Lewis, which it has in the past, tore his ACL 2 years ago, the team was okay. The team got to the AFC Championship game. If something happened to James White, they could overcome that because Deion Lewis is a similar player. If something happened to Rex Burkhead, they could overcome it because they've got White and Lewis. But if something happened to Gillislee, I would be very, very interested to see exactly what happened to the Patriots' offense. We know the offense is stacked. I love what they have in the in that running back room. But if Mike Gillislee is the only guy on that roster, the only guy in that running back room that can that is that short yardage impact back, that's the guy that you can't replace. That's why tonight I am so interested in seeing Rex Burkhead. Rex Burkhead, outside of the quarterback play, outside of Jimmy Garoppolo, and outside of Jacoby Brissett, Rex Burkhead is the individual player on offense I am more excited to watch than any other player in tonight's preseason opener against Jacksonville. Burkhead is a guy who all along I have thought of him as more of a pass-catching back, as more of a guy that Brady can check down to. But the more we read in training camp, the more we hear that Burkhead does have the ability to run in between the tackles and that Bill Burkhead is willing to run in between the tackles and the team is willing to put him in a position to run in between the tackles. So that's why I want to see how he is used today, how many snaps he plays, how often he gets the ball, and what type of situations and what formations he gets the ball in. That is why I absolutely want to see how Burkhead plays. Cody in St. Albans texts in on the Town Fair Tire text line. It's the NFL, Brady. They can always get another running back. The Pats have money. They can buy anyone they want to if Gillislee was to get hurt. Yes, you can get other running backs off the street, but can you get an impact running back? Can you get a running back that is built to get fourth and one? This is not just about acquiring bodies. The Patriots have bodies. You want a guy who, I mean, they let LeGarrette Blount go, a two-time Super Bowl champion. They let him go so that they could bring in Mike Gillislee. This is not just a running back. This is a guy they think of as the running back. This is the guy they think of as the impact player. This is the guy that's going to help us salt out victories. This is the guy that's going to help us run out the clock. This is the guy that's going to get a two-point conversion for us when we need to run. This isn't just a guy. This is the guy for the Patriots, and I have to see what Burkhead can do today in his absence, because if there ever was a situation where Gillislee wasn't in the lineup and wasn't available, Burkhead seems like he would be the next most logical guy to be that ground-and-pound runner. I know what I have in James White. I know what I have in Deion Lewis. I have a scat back. I have a guy that can take 4 or 5 carries. That can take 7 carries, but it's going to be mostly on the perimeter. I need to see what someone can do running between the tackles. Man, I am so just geeked up for football to be back tonight. 7:30 is the kickoff, and it feels good to say this. We had the game on 101.3 ESPN pregame show. We had the coverage starting at 7 today. Patriots and Jaguars from Gillette Stadium. Looking forward to that. How about another team in Boston that's playing pretty good? How about the Red Sox? They've won 8 straight now. We've got all of our listeners here. I say Red Sox, and everyone just perks up here. Rick Porcello, he's starting to get hot at the right time. Porcello, look, went 22-4 a year ago, won the Cy Young. Maybe he wasn't quite that good, but he's not the guy who was 5-14 this year either. He's not that bad. The things that, Jason, you remember this. I remember it perfectly. We were at Northern Cakes in Plattsburgh a little over a month ago, and I said, I think Rick Porcello is a guy who can turn it around in the second half of the season. He is doing that. Multiple quality starts in a row now logged for Porcello. He's been going 6 innings or more in every start since the All-Star break. The luck is starting to even out for him. I mean, the batting average on balls in play stat, and it's the one that we focus on a lot in the sabermetric community, I mean, he was over almost like 390 for a while. The average of batting average on balls put in play is 300. He was way over that. Now he's down to 333. It's starting to regress back towards what it should be. Which, what does that mean? He's pitching into some better luck than he was early in the season. His record won't be amazing by the time the year ends. He might go 9-16. But if he's starting to get hot at the right time, that can be such a boost for the Red Sox. And here's why. if the Red Sox get to the playoffs, and if you're in a short series, you're going to need three starters. Well, you know that Chris Sale's one. You know that if he's healthy, David Price is going to be two. So you're going to have two lefties there. John Farrell is not going to go into the playoffs with three lefties in his playoff rotation. He's not going to do it. He's going to be able to use one of those lefties, Eduardo Rodriguez, be able to put him in the bullpen. And that's going to mean Porcello's going to be in the starting rotation. You're going to need a righty to break up all those lefties. You're going to need that. You're not going to see three lefties in the rotation for the Red Sox. I don't think there's any way you would see that. Porcello is the guy then that needs to step up and be ready to pitch in the playoffs in the starting rotation. He's shown the ability to get deep into games because he goes six innings almost every start. He's just now figuring out, though, or he's just now getting some better luck, and he's not giving up as many hits, okay? I mean, Porcello, the biggest issue is that he's given up a ton of hits this season. A ton of hits. Now, as that batting average on balls in play starts to regress a little bit, he's pitching into some better luck, giving up less hits. The thing with him now is the home runs. I mean, he's given up, you know, in the top three in home runs allowed in the league right now. He gave up two more yesterday, but by and large, the luck is starting to turn around for Rick Porcello. How vital is Porcello to the Red Sox rest of the season? Get on in on the phone lines, 802-66 or 802-655-6672. Get in on the text line at the same number as well. When we come back, though, we'll answer your text. We've got batting practice, the best sound bites in sports. More on the Patriots tonight and more on Vince Wilfork. All that and more. Champlain Valley Game Night live from the Poorhouse in South Burlington. You know it, down near the airport on 101.3 ESPN.
Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas. Only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back, Champlain Valley Game Night here on a Thursday, live at the Poorhouse, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I nearly just took out all of the equipment trying to step over all of these wires here that we have trying to keep the show on the air. Intern Sam's like, that's a pretty bold move for me there. You know why it had to be a bold move? Because Intern Sam wouldn't get up so that I could get in the normal way.
You could have just asked me.
I didn't need to ask you. I thought it was implied. Like, hey, the guy's coming back to sit in his chair, but no, we're going to make him climb over. It's like, I could have played limbo with it, but I liked it to step over it.
I didn't see you come back, so.
You didn't see me come back because you were needy. Do you know everybody here? What is this, all men's league hockey people at this thing?
I know a lot of people around the area.
You know a lot of people around the area. Mike in the man cave tweets it, or a text. And Arnie's got me doing this, Jason, where it's a text and he calls it a tweet, and now he's got me misspeaking.
Stupidity is contagious.
Mike in the man cave says, Drew Pomeranz has been way better than David Price. I take him over David Price in the playoff rotation, and that's a good point as well. But I still don't see three lefties. I really don't think if Price is healthy that Price is out of the rotation. I just don't see it. But if you're going on name, then certainly Price is the guy. If you're going on this season, then Pomeranz will be the guy. But I think Pomeranz will be a guy that ends up in the bullpen. I think Pomeranz will be a guy who maybe like in an ALCS and a best of seven, maybe he does start a game four, but I don't see him in a best of five where you need three starters. I don't see Pomeranz cracking the rotation. Not because he hasn't been good, but the money you have invested and the prospects you have invested in Sale and Price, and then the name recognition of Porcello and being right-handed, I think that's certainly valuable. Batting practice, though, a lot of good stuff here. A lot of stuff mainly on the Patriots, but some interesting stuff from Charles Barkley. Batting practice, the best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what and what's going on?
Champlain Valley Game Night, batting practice.
Batting practice here on a Thursday. Pats and Jaguars, a guy we won't see tonight is Brandon Cooks. Patriots traded a first-round pick for Cooks to get him from this New Orleans Saints. Jeff Howe, Comcast Sports New England, he was there today. He talked about Brandon Cooks and the deep ball and what he brings to this offense.
Oh, my goodness. The kid's phenomenal. And I think he's bringing the best out of Brady going down the field. It's an artwork with Cook's ability to get open down the field. And just the way that he runs his routes, he can run the entire route tree. And I kind of compare that to Mike Wallace early in his career in a different way. Because when the Patriots would line up against Mike Wallace, they would say privately to you, well, you know, he runs one route. You only have to worry about one route. Can't do anything else. Brandon Cooks can do everything. So he's a deep ball artist who can use that to run the full tree.
I have completely underestimated Brandon Cooks all offseason. I thought that he was Mike Wallace 2.0. When they acquired Brandon Cooks, I was thinking Julian Edelman is the underneath guy. Danny Amendola is an underneath guy. Malcolm Mitchell is a 8 to 15 yard guy who can run a lot of outs, and Cooks is the deep threat. I thought the Patriots were really, really specializing their receiver position. That doesn't appear to be the case. I really thought Cooks was just a home run threat. Just a home run threat, deep vertical down the field. If he's going to be a guy who can run the entire route tree and can do a curl, can do an out, can do a post, can run the skinny, can catch underneath, can use the breakaway speed, can catch wide receiver screens, it's just another guy that it gives the Patriots another dynamic impact on that offense. He's a guy who can be an absolute impact player. When you start to think about the Patriots, what makes them so scary? Look, Tom Brady is number one. First and foremost, it's Tom Brady because you got the greatest quarterback of all time playing. That right there, the ability he has to know his offense, the continuity he has with the coaching staff, and the cerebral ability he has to pick apart a defense and have seen every defense and decode it both at the line of scrimmage and while the play is going on, that scares you first and foremost. But if you go beyond Tom Brady, the unpredictability of the Patriots offense, they have five wide receivers that all have a unique skill set and can all do multiple things. Edelman, as I said, underneath, tough, short yardage, quick slant. Amendola, third down, red zone. He excels in those areas under pressure. Malcolm Mitchell, I like him a lot. He came on last year, final eight games of the season, and gave this offense another different threat. Chris Hogan, a guy who he looks stereotypically like Julian Edelman, but he took the top off the defense in the playoffs against Houston and against Pittsburgh. I mean, he was unbelievable in those playoffs. And now you add Cooks. And then you've got four running backs that all do different things. And then you've got Gronk. And then you've got Dwayne Allen as a possibility. I mean, there's so many options on this team. They are not reliant or beholden to anybody. And that's why if I'm playing fantasy football this year, I'd stay away from most Patriots outside of Tom Brady, because Brady's going to get his numbers. He's going to throw it to somebody and get his numbers. If Gillislee stays healthy, I'd look for him as a guy who can vulture touchdowns and get touchdowns for you. But other than that, I'd stay away from them all. There's too many options. Great for the Patriots, the real team. Bad for you and your fantasy team. Not only are the reporters who've been watching practice high on Brandon Cooks, well, the players are high on Brandon Cooks. How about the guys in that receiving room, Julian Edelman, talking about Brandon Cooks at yesterday's practice?
Great teammate. B. Cooks, Cookie. He's a great energy around us. You know, he works hard. He's disciplined. He's fast. And he does a lot of things. He makes great catches. But more importantly, he's just a great teammate. And it's exciting to have him in our room. It's exciting to have him on our team because he's going to make us better.
Another thing that makes the Patriots so good, truly, selflessness. It sounds corny. The Patriots appear to be so selfless that they do have this team-first attitude. Guys taking pay cuts because they want to win. They want to help other guys get paid so that they can still win. If you ask, what is ruining the Cleveland Cavaliers right now? Ego, right? The desire to be the man, the desire to get out from someone's shadow. Julian Edelman could be resentful of Brandon Cooks. Edelman has been Tom Brady's go-to, best friend on and off the field. Now everyone's coming in talking about Cooks. Julian Edelman could be upset. I'd understand it if he was upset. But he's praising this guy. That's what great teams have. That's what great team culture has. And the Patriots have it. Love them or hate them, they've got that culture that every team wants. Vince Wilfork, an integral part of multiple championship teams in New England, he hung it up for good this week. Spent the last few years with the Texans. He officially signed a one-day contract as a member so he could retire a member of the Patriots. He did that yesterday. A couple of good sound bites from Wilfork and from guys talking about Wilfork. Vince Wilfork talking about why he stepped away. Jason, give me number four.
Physically, I could play football for as long as I want, I believe, and I truly believe that. But mentally, it comes a point where you think waking up, you know, what you have to take your body through just to get warmed up. And over time, it took a toll on me.
Vince Wilfork talking about the mental toll it takes to get ready to play. And then just, I mean, football is an incredibly demanding cerebral sport. Even if you think about the defensive line, you say, well, how hard is it, right? Just go get the quarterback. At the fundamental crux of the position, just go get the quarterback. When you're talking about trying to teach guys swim move, we're going to stunt here, stop the run, play the read option, do this, do that, that's on the end. In the interior, you know, Wilfork's job is really just to stuff up the run game, but there's a lot of things that go into the mind of a football player. It is a tough game to understand. Ask a lot of fans. How many fans can take you through what the dime defense means? How many fans can take you through what the nickel defense means? How many fans can take you through what the wishbone is? How many people can break that down? Football players do have to have developed minds, and academically, it does take a toll on you. Vince Wilfork, beloved by his teammates, beloved by his coaches. Julian Edelman, he got emotional talking about Vince Wilfork. Jason, give me number two.
It's a sad day when the big fellow hangs him up. You know, I loved Big V as a teammate, his family, you know, as a young player here in New England. You know, there's a lot of ups and downs, and Vince, his wife Bianca, and his family were just always there and always had, I always had a shoulder to lean on with that family. So, you know, I want to congratulate him on an unbelievable career. I mean, he's flat out stud, and he's going to be missed, but I think we should celebrate the kind of career he had. He was, you know, arguably one of the best.
Patriot fans, a lot of you on Twitter, really expressing a deep appreciation for what Wilfork accomplished. Now, he's a lovable player here. Why is he so lovable? He's got a great smile. He has a good personality. We saw the way he retired. He's got the video of him grilling and all that. I mean, he's a likable guy. People like Vince Wilfork. Why am I, someone text me in here, why am I not feeling the sadness about Vince Wilfork? I know the easy answer is, well, Brady, you're not a fan of the Patriots, so you don't get it. And maybe that's just as far as it goes. I'm not a Patriot fan, so I don't have an appreciation for Wilfork like the way you do. But people are talking about, should Wilfork be in the Hall of Fame and all this. And I just am not, I haven't found myself interested in that conversation. I have a hard time figuring out why. Maybe it's because he played defense. And when I think about Hall of Famers, I think about stat-driven awards. When I think about the Hall of Fame in general, when I think about football, it doesn't matter to me as much. Baseball is the Hall of Fame that matters, and it matters to us because it's a stat-driven Hall of Fame. Tangible information, less about just what impact did a player have, and it's more about, here's raw numbers. Maybe that's why it doesn't matter to me as much. Maybe it's because Wilfork played defense, and when I think about stat accumulation, I think about quarterback, I think about running back, I think about receiver, I think about tight end. Maybe it's because he played defensive tackle. At least if he's a defensive end, we're talking about sacks, we're talking about Reggie White, we're talking about Jason Taylor. He's not sacks either. Vince Wilfork only had 16 sacks in his career, but he did make 5 Pro Bowls and 1 All-Pro selection. A lot of Patriot fans are all sad about Wilfork, and I haven't had that resonate with me yet. Cody in St. Albans on the text line, Town Fair Tire text line, he goes, I'm talking with my buddy Chris, and he said the 86 Bears could beat the Pats of today. I said it would be a close game. What would your fantasy game could be if I could have, well, I think there's something misspelled here. What do I think that would be, the 86 Bears against today's Patriots? I think today's Patriots would win, but it also depends on what rules we're playing with. Are we playing with the rules of the 86 Bears, or are we playing with the watered-down rules that favor the offense, in which case I would heavily favor today's Patriots? Jason, I got more clips to play. Give me the music again.
Champlain Valley game night. Batting practice.
Vince Wilfork, how good was he? Bill Belichick gave a pretty high endorsement. Jason, let me hear the Bill Belichick soundbite.
Vince was kind of the captain of the captains. He was the true leader of the team. He was the kind of voice of the team.
Bill Belichick, short, but he's all. Bill Belichick, I'll say this. That's a short soundbite. It's only 5 or 6 seconds. But when a guy has had a great career, Bill Belichick often does take the time to praise that player. Bill Belichick is so complimentary of players that have had an impact on his team or on others. I mean, he complimented Jason Taylor the other day getting into the Hall of Fame. He said, we have never game planned for a player more than we have for Jason Taylor when he was playing with the Dolphins. He's been incredibly outspoken in his praise of David Harris, who's now on his team but was a longtime New York Jet, and it continued this week with Vince Wilfork. New York Giants open up their preseason slate tomorrow. Olivia Vernon, one of the top defensive players on that Giants roster, he said, we can't rely on what our defense did a year ago. Here's Vernon talking about what his team needs to do this year.
We just got to keep focused, you know, focused on the main task. You know, we can't really think about what we did last year. You know, the main thing was what we did last year. We came together and communicated. We got things done. And, you know, same thing again. We proved ourselves. So now we got to prove ourselves again this year. And nothing changed. Nothing changes one bit. You know, we got a lot of guys that's on the defense that's still together, which, you know, in this league, it doesn't happen so often. So we're just trying to keep building, keep gelling together and trying to make things work.
Champlain Valley game night here on a Thursday live at the Poorhouse. I love the Giants defense. I love the Giants team this year. I love what they have on offense with Eli, with the ability to also have multiple running backs, although their running back situation is more murky than the Patriots. Beckham, Marshall, Sterling Shepard, all of it is really good. I love Evan Engram, the pick at tight end. Defensively, Vernon, Jason Pierre-Paul. Can they get after the quarterback again? Can Pierre-Paul, after getting that big money deal in this offseason, can he live up to that contract and play with the same kind of motivation that he played with a season ago? Can Janoris Jenkins be the lockdown corner that he was last season? Can Landon Collins continue to ascend to the level of maybe the best safety, one of the best safeties in the NFL? He, to me, is so good. He feels like that Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Troy Polamalu impact type safety. Eric Berry, I love Landon Collins. I am so high on him, and I'm high on the Giants this year. Another guy who people are high on is a guy in college. And I know college football is not a major interest up here, Northern New York and in Vermont, but Sam Darnold could be the quarterback of the future. He will be the quarterback of the future for one NFL team. It's just a question of when that is. His head coach, USC, Clay Helton, talked about how good he could be.
The ceiling's still so high for you. We're not a finished product. There's so much more we can learn, and he's accepted that, which is really neat. I mean, he's accepted the coaching. He accepts the fact that he's got so much growth as a quarterback left to go.
Sam Darnold is going, if he comes out, will be a top three pick. There's three quarterbacks that everyone's big on. It's Sam Darnold at USC, it's Josh Rosen at UCLA, and it's the kid out of Wyoming. I mean, these guys are, and Lamar Jackson out of Louisville. There's four quarterbacks that could be first-round selections next year. Sam Darnold could be very well playing in the AFC East for the next 10 years because he could get drafted by the Jets, so I think it could be the worst team in football. Again, I am like you up here. I think we, in the listenership and me, are on the same page here. College football is not my favorite sport. I don't have a team that I latch on to, much like most of you probably don't have teams that you latch on to. I enjoy watching big games, I enjoy watching big players, and I know the storylines because it's my job. Sam Darnold is a kid who I'm really interested in. He's in Southern California, but he is not flashy. He is about as boring as it gets. He's just a student in the game. He's a guy who understands where he came from, appreciates where he came from. Talked a lot to Bleacher Report this week about his childhood and, you know, thanking his mom and dad for the opportunities they gave him and all that. I like Sam Darnold. Could be a guy that the Patriots are going against for the next 10 years or so. We talked about Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen is a guy who had the controversial comments yesterday in which he said basically that school and football just don't mix. Well, Charles Barkley, he had some thoughts on that. Barkley, number one, Jason.
I don't want any rich white kid who's going to be one, two, or three in the draft telling these young black kids, no, just come here and play football. And then after 4 years, they ain't got no education, and they ain't never going to step foot in the NFL. I hate that message.
So basically, I hate Charles Barkley's message as well. I talked about this yesterday. I'm going to get into it again in about 10 minutes as well. I'm tired of race mattering. Why does Charles Barkley have to say, I'm tired of a rich white kid telling poor black kids like this? You know what? There are rich African Americans also. There are poor white kids as well. Stop. Society as a whole needs to stop pointing out division. Is it the problem in society? Division? Everything is us versus them in some way? Why do we keep pointing it out? There are rich white kids. There are rich black kids. There are poor white kids, there are poor black kids. I am tired of having this pointed out to us in every possible way. I don't like Josh Rosen's comments. I respect his right to say them, but I completely disagree. I was a college athlete and a high-level student. Now, not at the school level of UCLA and not at the athletic level of UCLA, and I totally understand there's a major difference. But if you're telling me it's impossible to be a good athlete and be a good student, it's not impossible. You're just unwilling. That's what it comes down to. You need a 2-0 in most cases to stay eligible. A lot of kids can be great athletes and achieve a 2-0. A lot of kids can be high-level athletes and achieve a 3-0 if they want to. It is difficult. But you know what? Craig Krenzel, the old quarterback at Ohio State, won a national championship and majored in molecular biology. Did pretty well. Andrew Luck graduated early from Stanford. Deshaun Watson graduated in 3 years from Clemson. High-level football programs, national championship-level programs. And they were championship-level students. So not okay with what Rosen said yesterday, not okay with what Barkley said today. When we come back, Champlain Valley Game Night continues on from the Poorhouse. We'll tell you more about where we'll be tomorrow, what we're doing at the Travis Roy Foundation. And the New York Mets, they did something last night that proved me right, 1 year in the making. You'll hear that and more, 101.3 ESPN.
Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Final segment, everybody. Champlain Valley Game Night live at the Poorhouse in South Burlington, right on Williston Road. You know we're near the airport, so come on, hang out, be here until 7 o'clock. One more segment to go. Getting a lot of text in here on the TikTok Jewelers guest line, or rather on the Town Fair Tire text line. Brian in Richmond says, I went to school, milked cows in the morning and night, worked 20 hours in school a week as a tutor, graduated with a 399 with a dual major in IT and accounting. So Josh Rosen, cry me a river. That's what he says. You want to get in with your thoughts, let us know as well. Remember, tomorrow, we're very excited about this. We're going to be out at the Travis Roy Foundation. We're going to be out at the Wiffle Ball Tournament at Little Fenway in Jericho. We had Pat O'Connor for the tournament on yesterday. We've set up a bunch of interviews for us on site. We'll be there starting at 4, going up until 6:30. We're going to be playing. Arnie and I are playing. We've got a couple listeners out there, a couple of ringers that we picked up in the tournament. Intern Sam is playing, but he didn't want to play on our team. He wanted to play on a different team tomorrow, so he's going to be out there as well. Going to be just a blast. We're pumped up about it. We've got a lot of great local interviews coming on tomorrow. We're going to try to get Travis Roy, but we are going to have, for sure, Taylor Coppenrath joining us at 4:30, the former UVM basketball standout who helped UVM upset Syracuse in what could arguably be the biggest win in program history back in the NCAA tournament back in 2005. So we're very, very excited about that. Appreciate Will Reeve of ESPN coming on today. Will Reeve, you see him on First and Last. You see him all over the place, SportsCenter, everywhere. Middlebury graduate, a guy who does a lot of work for spinal cord injury awareness and spinal cord injury, raising money to try to prevent and cure spinal cord injuries. And he's a Middlebury grad, so he joined us in the 4 o'clock hour. If you've missed any of that, go to 1013ESPN.com. The New York Mets traded Jay Bruce yesterday, and they traded him to the Cleveland Indians, essentially for salary cap relief. And the New York Mets, by doing that, they proved me right, a year in the making. Last year, the New York Mets were hovering around the playoffs, and they ended up getting to the playoffs and losing in the wild card game to the San Francisco Giants. They acquired Jay Bruce with the idea of having him provide their offense with a lot of power in the same way Yoenis Cespedes had done the year earlier. They picked up Bruce for the idea that they had him for last year, for the last half of the season, for after the trade deadline, and for this year because he was a good player, power hitter. I knew it at the time. I thought the Jay Bruce move was absolutely horrible. Now, is the Jay Bruce move the reason why the Mets are bad? No, it's not. Not at all. Noah Syndergaard injuries, Matt Harvey's injuries, all of that, none of that helps. Yoenis Cespedes has been injured multiple times. Absolutely none of that helps at all with that. Those are reasons why the Mets are where they are. But Jay Bruce was never going to be an impact player. He was never going to be a guy who was going to carry the New York Mets. And I feel bad saying that. I felt bad saying it at the time. Jay Bruce wasn't a guy that was going to hit for high average. He wasn't a guy who was a great defender. He wasn't a guy who was going to carry your offense for long stretches of time. And the Mets ultimately got rid of him, and they gave up essentially – they got essentially nothing for him. And the prospects they gave up to the Cincinnati Reds were a guy named Dilson Herrera, who's a decent infield prospect. And I would have rather had him, I think. Even though the Mets got to the playoffs last year, it absolutely just did not seem like a good move at the time. It did not seem – it seems like they – it just seems like a waste. It seems like a waste of a year to me that the New York Mets got Jay Bruce and then now got rid of him for essentially a bag of baseballs. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Jason, you remember yesterday I was doing a little social commentary, which I don't generally do because I like sports. I generally believe in the stick-to-sports mantra. At least that's how I personally do it. Other people, like Lebatard, they do really good at the off-sports stuff. I try not to go there all that often. But I got tired. I am tired of seeing race be a thing in sports. I'm tired of everything racially being pointed out, okay? He's a white running back. He's a black quarterback. He's the great white hope in basketball. This is white. This is black. I'm just tired of it. And a Facebook commenter told this to me. I'm going to say this. Tim, he goes, Brady, you might be tired of hearing about it, but how do you think minorities feel having to live it? It remains a story because it's still relevant. It's a good point. I say this. Look, I'm not a minority. I know I have, on the spectrum of easiness, I have it the easiest. I am a white male. That gives me not a lot of right to complain about anything because you're right. I have generally the easiest and biggest piece of the pie in my demographic historically. I totally get that. But that's not what this is about to me. The reason why I'm tired of it is that, look, what do I know? I'm not a social worker. I'm just a human being. What do I know that's an issue in society? It's racial division, right? That's the issue, racial division. And why does racial division continue to come up? Because we keep providing it a commentary. We keep pointing out difference. When we say Christian McCaffrey is a white running back, when we say Zach Zenner is a white running back, we are continuing to create that division, and it doesn't matter who it is that's saying it. To me, that's part of the problem in society. That is part of the problem. When we say that this guy is a black quarterback, or when we say that this guy is a black hockey player, we're pointing out difference. We're pointing out, yes, in one hand, it's great to celebrate diversity. I am all for celebrating diversity. I'm all for inclusion. I'm all for people breaking barriers. But at some point, it just grows tired to me. If the biggest problems in society stem around division and separateness and differentness and creating one side against the other, why do we in sports continue to feed that fire? We continue to feed that fire by pointing out every time there's a racial difference in sports. You know, we talk about, could this pitcher be the guy that brings African-Americans back to baseball? Could Jimmer Fredette be the great white hope? We keep talking about it. If we don't want race to matter as a society, then why are we in sports continuing to feed that machine? That was my point yesterday. Not that it's not, life isn't tough for minorities. Of course it's tough for minorities. But I don't want to be somebody that continues to point out what is different. What is us versus them? What is this versus that? What is this side versus that side? This just doesn't seem right to me. And I'm just tired of it. And it was spearheaded by the fact that I was watching 30 for 30s that were focusing on subject matter 30 years ago. And the same racial conversations they were having in those videos are the same racial conversations we're having now. And it seems like as a society, we should have grown more by them. Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Last thing I want to get to is this. We talked about Josh Rosen's comments yesterday about, we heard a little bit in batting practice about how he said that school and football don't mix. And Arnie made the point to me that for not just the players, but for individual institutions, it's very, very difficult to succeed at a high level because some schools have academic standards that are too high, basically. You can't be good, you know, if you're Notre Dame. You can't be good if you're Stanford. You can't be good if you are this school or that school that has high academics. You know what I say? Baloney. You know what the lifeblood of college athletics is? It's recruiting. Those kids exist. There are high-level academic kids that are good athletes that go to good schools. You just got to find them. Let me tell you this. When I was coaching at Norwich, when I was coaching baseball at Norwich, and when I was coaching junior college at Hudson Valley Community College, you have to know what your recruiting niche is. When I was coaching baseball at Norwich, you know what the first thing I thought of when I recruited was? It's a part military school, mostly a military school. I'm probably not going to get civilian A-list kids from the Boston area. Not going to happen. There's too many other schools for them to go to. So who did I look at? We need to get military kids. We need to get kids that want to be in the military. Because you know what? Then I've shrunk their pie of schools they're interested in from a bunch of public schools in Boston to now I've shrunk it down to Army, Navy, Air Force, VMI, Citadel, all those military. I've shrunken their recruiting base from 2,000 other schools to 10 other schools. And that's how you do it. And oh, by the way, by doing that, now I've opened up every state in the country to my recruiting base. I'm able now. Just know your niche. The teams at Norwich, I knew they could be good. How could they be good? Recruit military kids and do it from all over the country. That's the formula. That is the formula. It's not try to get this four-star recruit from Boston. It's not going to happen. Go get a kid who wants to be in the military. Same thing when you're talking about high-level academic schools. Know your niche. Know your niche. If I'm Stanford, why am I going to waste my time on the guy with a 2-0? Go find the guy with the 4-0. There are high-level academic camps out there in which these kids just all congregate for you. Go find them. Go find them. That's the lifeblood of college athletics, just recruiting. Don't tell me that it's too hard. You've got 97 assistants out there on these college staffs. You can find the kids. They exist. Yes, it is a challenge at Notre Dame to find these kids. It is a challenge at Stanford, but it absolutely can be done. Matt in South Burlington says, great job, Brady. Brian in Richmond says, white men can jump. Well, I guess he's trying to break down racial stereotypes as well. Brian Richmond goes, how good were you? At baseball, I would like to say I was 10-9 in my career with an ERA in the mid-4s. If you're asking me honestly, it was 10-9. I played 4 years of Division III baseball. That makes me better than most, I imagine, that didn't get the chance to play college baseball. But I wasn't playing Division I, so that's how good I was right there. 10-9 with an ERA in the mid-4s for a program that wasn't that good when I played in it and now is much, much better. Thanks to everybody out here at the Poorhouse. You guys have been great. We've had an absolute blast. Been hanging out since 4. Gave away a pair of Yankee tickets thanks to our friends at Labatt Blue. Thanks to Will Reeve, who joined us on the phone lines, Middlebury graduate at ESPN. That interview will be available online. Pumped up now. Thanks to Buster Olney as well. That interview also online. And now Brian Richmond wants to know how good our Norwich team was. We won 9 games, which we won 4 the year before that. So I was there for a year. We won 5 more games. We made the playoffs the first time in 10 years. So we were much better. So that's how we were. Thanks to Will Reeve. Thanks to Buster Olney. Thanks to everyone here. Tomorrow, live from the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament. Taylor Coppenrath is going to join us. We're working on a bunch of other local interviews. We cannot wait. Thanks to intern Sam. Thanks to Jason. Thanks to Arnie. Thanks to all of you for hanging out. And thanks to Labatt Blue for having us here. We'll see you tomorrow live from the Travis Roy Wiffle Ball Foundation Tournament. 101.3 ESPN.